Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Now to one of those life journeys that surely should be the stuff of books and movies, except it's real life. Our next Open House guest went from being a single mum in Sydney to the medical director of an NGO working with lepers and children with a disability, as well as child soldiers in southwest China. Due to the delicacy of some of her work still to this day, we're going to protect our guest by calling her Sandra during our discussion. Sandra, thank you for joining us on Open House. Let's begin the multi-dimensional story of your life with how you found your faith.
Well, I'm a victim of friendship evangelism. I found myself pregnant at 19 and alone, and a friend of mine from work just really took me under her wing, and there was something about her which was so unique and attractive and just beautiful. And she'd actually trained as a midwife. So I remember casually mentioning to her one day, and I didn't even really know her very well, oh, would you, you know, think about being my birthing partner? And she said, absolutely. and then as time went on, she would say, okay, well, if I'm going to come to your birthing classes, I want you to come to church with me. And I was like, are you serious, church? No.
Surely not.
And week after week, she'd ask me. And then to actually keep her quiet, one day I just thought, oh, for goodness sake, I'll just go. And it was crazy. But I think God just got a hold of my heart. And I gave him a little bit of, okay, God, I think that you exist. And I'm willing to believe that you do. And I think he was like, okay, that'll do. I'll take you. he just really changed my life.
Now, what were you doing for a living? Because what you choose to do after this point is remarkable.
I was working in cancer research and in cancer surgery down in a southern Sydney hospital. And so it was very high tech. Mm-hmm. And it was wonderful. I loved it. And I actually did a short-term mission trip to Indonesia. And I was out, we went into the jungles of Kalimantan, of southern Borneo. And I was seeing patients there. I had like 60 patients a day. And I was just lost there. You know, I was like, well, if I could have a CT scan and a blood test and an X-ray, you know, yeah. It was just thing after thing after thing. And I realized I needed to retrain to help, know how to better serve people in a really
in this environment
resource poor yeah. area or in the jungles
yeah
and yeah so even though I had a medical background, I realized that I wasn't trained to think. I was trained, you know, yes. to diagnose using the tools. And so I actually went and retrained in America as a primary healthcare worker, which kind of is like a third world doctor where you have to diagnose and with very, very limited instrumentation. It's actually quite exciting to do because you need to look at the whole person and their history, you know, and even their cultural practices. You know, yeah. people that I'm working with in Asia, they eat a lot of raw meat. And, you know, so I've had patients that have come presented with tapeworm cysts in the brain at 22 with seizures. And you know, just something that because I knew of their cultural practices, it was easy to diagnose. And actually for that particular patient, we did send him to a big city, get a CT, an MRI, and actually found that he did have tapeworm cysts in his brain.
So you retrain, you upskill.
Yes.
And how then does the China conversation start to emerge in your mind when you say, you know what, over there, that's where I'm going. That's the direction I'm being called to head to.
Yeah. The Lord really used a documentary from 60 Minutes, and maybe some of your listeners would have watched this, almost 20 years ago now, maybe even more. Isn't that scary? But there was an expose on Chinese orphanages. It was called The Dying Room.
I remember this.
Do you remember this?
Vividly.
Do you know, I've never even seen it, but a friend of mine saw it and came to my room. We were in the same mission organization back then, and told me about it. And I was so moved by what she just told me. I've not to this day never seen
it. You've still not seen it?
I've still not seen it. But we started praying together for it. My heart was so moved by this. And actually, I would say it's probably the first time I've ever travailed in prayer. Mm-hmm. And even I consciously thought, this is so strange. Like, why is my spirit so moved to pray for this. And but I just did, and it kind of stayed with me for the next few days, and so much so vividly that I really felt the call of God to say, what am I going to do about it? What should be my response to orphan crisis in China? And that's actually how I got to go, was in response to God moving my heart to care for orphans in China.
Fill in the details around the Bless China International program, where you became a regional director.
Yeah. So Bless China International is a wonderful non-government organization, an NGO working in just in one part of China. And the majority of them are Christians, and they do an amazing work amongst rural poor, training village doctors, training teachers, village teachers, working with people with leprosy, really caring for the poor of the poor. And it's just lovely grassroots stuff. And I was the regional medical director for our area with Bless China for about 12 years.
Now, leprosy is not something that we come across every day. In fact, up until relatively recently, I thought we had a handle on this, and it was largely an extinct disease. And yet, it's thriving in these communities.
Yeah, there is still a lot of leprosy today, especially in tropical countries. It's a bacteria, and there is a treatment for it. There's no vaccine for it. So what we try to focus on is early detection of it, because it is completely curable.
It is curable.
It is curable. But the thing is, when you discover it late, because it is quite a, it's a condition where you don't often notice that you've got it. You may get a little bit of weakness or a skin patch. And if you're living in a tropical setting anyway, yeah, you kind of think,
it's,
oh, maybe
regular,
it's just a fungal thing. Yeah. You know, you don't recognize it as possibly leprosy. So if it's caught late, it can cause nerve damage, and it's that nerve damage which is irreparable. So that's when you see these pictures, and you, you know, when they have damage to their hands and their feet, the cool places of their body, they get nerve damage, and then they can't feel or they can't sense pressure, so they get burnt, or they walk without shoes, because often they are very poor, mm-hmm. And then those injuries result, and they can result in the loss of bone and limbs and things like that.
It was orphans and children that first inducted you into this work. Mm. Let's touch more now on the life of a child in these areas.
I think the area that we live in is quite unique to China, because it's a tribal area, it's a poor area. They're actually allowed to have more than one child, which is quite unique. I think children are loved and precious all over the world.
Yeah.
You know, mothers love their kids and want the best for their kids everywhere. I think that they're often in very difficult circumstances. So, many of the children are very poor that we are working with. And yet there is a real sense of community. I think for us, the specific difficulty in our area is the acceptance of a child that's born, say, with a deformity or a disability. Not so much because you can only have one child. That may be more common in China as a whole. But in our area, there's a lot of superstition. If a child is born with, say, an extra finger or with a cleft lip or palate or something like that, it's considered to be a demon-possessed child. Mm-hmm. And so they will often kill the child or abandon it.
How do you support those families? Do you encourage them to keep their children, or is that rejection immediate and now it's a case of looking after a child that's defending itself?
Actually, well, it's been amazing. What a privilege to be involved in working with these kind of kids and with these families. So we ourselves actually took on a number of children and as our own kids with disabilities. And I think as people saw that, and we were able to get great surgeries for them, and their lives really turn around, we actually kind of had authority to speak into other parents' lives. And it got to the stage where my husband and I did start a children's home, because sometimes there was a child with a disability that was left on the street and we couldn't find the parents. But we can't, because we live in a very small city, and I'm a white Australian woman with a lot of Chinese children as well.
I do stand out,
and I worked within the hospital system, within the medical system there. So often a child was born, and the doctors would say, "Listen, there's an Australian woman up at this place. Go find her, and she may help you with your child." So people, I've had about 20 babies turn up on my doorstep often with parents, and they would say, you know, they'd come to my doorstep with a cleft baby and say, "Could you please take my child?" And I'd say to them, "Well, actually, listen, I want to show you one of my kids that's had the surgery. You can see how well they've gone on. And I'm going to help you get a free surgery. And I'm going to give you the special bottles. I'm going to show you how to feed them." And the program that we had, the children's home that we had seven live-in very disabled children, and we had 50 families in the community who had chosen not to abandon their children.
Fantastic.
Isn't that a great statistic? Yeah. You know, we're not about making orphans or abandoning kids, but we supported the family. We had an Australian physiotherapist and an occupational therapist who joined our team. We trained up locals, and so we'd have a team that would go out into these families' homes. We would make chairs out of cardboard boxes and try to use the local materials and teach them how to better care for their kids. And the attitudes of those parents towards their children was just beautiful to see. A lot of those families became Christian families. They thanked us, you know, that they never did abandon their child, and these little kids have gone on amazingly.
The access to medical support, has that, as a result of your work there, become more accessible to people? And how are the cost of those surgeries covered?
I think China's a very unique country in that they do have the resources to increase infrastructure. So back 17 years ago, when I first moved to our area on the Burma-China border, Burma-Lao border, I was involved in training village doctors, and we trained 700 village doctors over about an 8-year period. So that actually got well-trained, low-level health practitioners into villages. Mm-hmm. So it gave villagers direct access, and obviously we would teach them to refer if things were beyond, say, the common cold or things like that, that they, you know, they could refer them. You know, China has made amazing road systems into these villages that we would literally have climbed on our hands and knees, pulling at grasses to get up to the top of this little village where there'd be grass huts and naked kids. Now there's a 2-lane road up to them.
Wow.
So for me, as a poverty alleviator and as a medical worker, it's amazing to see. I don't think any other country in the world has been able to do what China has done. And yes, there are still poor, but from my experience in my area, you know, that the people have now got clean water, electricity. They've had the ability to build new houses with proper roofs, roads, and even medical insurances. So I think it is a unique situation, and you know, there are still people that fall through the cracks, but it's the minority. For something like for the children with clefts, we work together with a hospital in the province, actually, and I have a small surgical fund that I started in response to the need of, there was a lot of surgical needs amongst the poor that I was coming across. So I started a small fund to pay basically for the transport to get to the free surgeries. And then we kind of work together with the local government hospitals.
Is the incidence of maladies that include cleft palates higher in this part of the world?
Amongst Asians, clefts are a little bit more common than, say, amongst a Caucasian group. In a village setting, you know, if they marry within themselves, they may be marrying their relatives.
Yes.
So there's a more higher tendency incidences of maybe some abnormalities.
Let's talk about the other. You mentioned that in this part of China, for instance, that you are allowed to have more than one child.
Mm.
In this particular region, children are conscripted at the age of 7. Is that a law? Is it an expectation? Where does that drive come from?
Okay. So to give you some background, I live 30 kilometres from the Burmese and Laotian border. So this phenomena is actually not happening within China. It's happening in northeastern Burma in some of the militant states. in that area. They are drug-funded freedom fighters, okay. But yes, they are fighting for their own autonomy,
yes.
Tend to be fighting against the Burmese military junta, mm-hmm. who is trying to gain access into their areas. Within this one particular area that we're focused on, it's an extremely porous border to China. In this area, it's a small geographical area, but there's about 50,000 children under the age of 16 that have been forced into these armies to fight these rebel armies, and they are conscripted. So one in two children, and often there's bigger families there because we're talking northeast Burma, not China.
Yeah.
So I have a good friend who is one of five girls, and three of the five girls have all been forced into the army.
It's not just boys, it's every child absolutely. Under the age of 16. If we choose you, you come.
Yeah, absolutely.
There and are these raids place. Where they take the children by force, or they just arrive in town and parents are expected to hand their children over?
Exactly. This is not Africa. This is not what we're seeing in some of the areas of Africa. This is conscription. It is known. The parents don't have a choice, but basically any orphan child goes straight to the army. A child that fails third grade goes to the army. If you do well in school, you could finish maybe even high school, but then you will probably still go to the army.
Are you ever allowed to leave your time as a conscript?
The people that I've known that are in it, they don't tend to leave, especially if they've been taken young. That becomes what they do. Sometimes if they marry, the girls that marry at least, they may leave when they have children. But there is a number of girls especially that run away. The armies really focus on fear. They use fear to keep the children there, and I'm sure that there are some similarities in that with the African situation. And they've actually witnessed other children running away and coming back and being beaten, or being shot and killed. So they want to make an example of kids to scare them. And I think when the tragic thing about this is these children's minds are so pliable. And what I found with working with these ex-child soldiers is that their sense of right and wrong and truth is so messed up. It's so skewed for them. They can't determine like what is right and what is good, because from a young age they've been lied to and manipulated, and it's very, very sad to see.
When you're armed with a semi-automatic rifle at the age of 7, what are the chances of surviving to your teens or early 20s? Is it a high attrition rate?
Well, interestingly, in this part of the world, there are only skirmishes.
Okay.
They're not in this particular group that we're working with. There are very few ongoing active fighting. There are skirmishes, and there have been skirmishes over in the past few years, but it's not all out war there. So they basically want to prepare their rebel state in case of full-on invasion.
But because you're not in open conflict all of the time, you do get a chance to grow up. You just grow up with a skewed view of the world.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And they, these kids are used to cook, to farm, to feed other soldiers. It's quite bizarre to think. One of my friends was in a dance troupe, and they go around and dance in different army units to kind of promote,
boost morale.
Boost morale. So some of these kids, not everybody is there actively fighting there, but you've got, if there's 50,000 child soldiers, you can imagine how many.
It's enormous.
Yeah, how many actual, adult soldiers there are too.
So how do groups like AK-47 come to meet and work with those people?
For me personally, I actually met a runaway child soldier. She was referred to me because she had quite a lot of emotional issues, and she was working for a friend of mine, a Christian friend of mine. So I met her, and she was taken as a child soldier at 7, and her sister was 9, and she had been she ran away at about 14, and that's when I found her. She had been raped twice, and so that's kind of our first meeting, kind of focused on that. And she couldn't understand that that was a bad thing. And she said, you know, but the men were good to me. And I said, you know, how is that good? Were they good to you? And she said, well, they said they were. Yeah. And it just shocked me. And as I tried to talk with her, like her inability to discern right from wrong and good from evil was just shocking. I'd never come across someone like this before. And she actually ran away from me multiple times, and she would come back into my life and we would talk more. And from a counseling point of view, I've learned so much through her, to start with, that not to ask direct questions, but let her, give her an opportunity to talk and to tell her story. And just as the Lord was putting on my heart to really focus on this issue, to really see His heart for justice to come to these kids, I prayed and said, Lord, I don't know how to help these kids. They are so messed up, so much more than any other, you know. I've worked with prostitutes and, you know, with girls that have been raped and trafficked, and these were just other. This group of kids were so wounded and broken, and I asked the Lord to teach me how to do it. And that very next day, this young ex-child soldier, this runaway child soldier, Anna, we'll call her Anna, rang me, and I hadn't spoken to her for about 18 months, and she said, could I come and live with you? I need help. Can I come and live with you and work for you? And she did. And just over that time, I just saw her really blossom. She never ran away from our family again. And she would just start to open up. And as I didn't directly ask her questions or confront her with things, she just started sharing. She ended up working for our children's home that we had for the disabled children. And today she runs the Sunday school in the local church. She's married. She's just had her first baby. She is an amazing, healthy, whole woman of God. And it gave me hope. You know, even though it was a long road, this is 8 years down the track. And I think that was the inspiration for us to keep focusing on it. And it's nothing, it's no big great program. We just share life with them. And from Anna, she has a network, obviously being in the army for a long time, of broken people. And she said, listen, Sandra, help me, and you need to go see her. So I've had a steady stream of runaway child soldiers come to our door and be in our family for sometimes short time, sometimes long time, and really, by the Lord's grace, seeing incredible healing and freedom for them.
You have what sounds like an awesomely large and diverse family, in quotation marks. You have the children with the disabilities, the clefts that have come into your family.
Yes.
You have these runaways from child armies.
Yeah.
How can we support you?
I'd love you to pray for me. Pray that we would have God's wisdom and His protection as we do this work. It's a pretty dangerous part of the world to be living in. I pray that He would use us, that His healing would flow through us. I pray for peace in these militant states and in the country of Burma. You know, this is the longest running civil war. And even though there's really positive changes happening in Burma or Myanmar, there is still ethnic cleansing today. There is still rebel armies conscripting kids today. And we really pray for peace in that country, for unity, I think, and forgiveness. You know, there is a lot of hurt and a lot of tragedy that's happened in that country, but as they hold on to unforgiveness, and it just perpetuates it in their future generations. So our hope is that the orphans and the kids that we come across and that we're able to help, and through projects like Project AK-47, that the Lord would raise up a new generation of leaders for their region, leaders that know Him and love Him and fear Him, and that would be instruments of transformation in their region. Yeah.
Sandra, thank you for bringing over there here to us. Thank you for your words of encouragement, and thank you for all of the miracles that you are allowing God to work through you and your family. It's an awesome thing, and when next you're in Australia, be sure and drop by, won't you?
Thank you. It's been a privilege to be with you. Thank you.